Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 270 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. It's been a little while, but we're back in the studio of our mother's basement. And I believe Jason has a rundown for us. I'm Trevor, by the way, in case you didn't know.
Yeah, because it has been a while. I forgot who you were. It's been a while.
People might not know.
A lot of things happened. I had a birthday, so we took some time off there. You did some traveling. So we were out of the studio.
I went to SeaWorld.
That's right. You saw the Blackfish, didn't you?
I did. I saw the movie, and then I went to SeaWorld.
You contributed to it, right? You don't feel bad about that? Is there a moral conundrum in there somewhere?
No, not really.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Did you actually see the whale show?
I did. It's the worst. I mean, that movie really ruined the whale show. Let me tell you, they get up there and then they have to tell you all this stuff. They're like, as you can see, we aren't mean to the whales. We positively reinforce them with training, and we're very nice to them, and they love it. And of course, the whales don't give a shit. And they couldn't even control them. So,
right. And there was three people before. Now there's two.
They had to be like. They can't go in the water, so the whales can just jump around. And the lady had to come out and be like, as you can see, they don't always listen to us, and the whales just do whatever the hell they wanted. It was probably the worst. I haven't been there in a long time, but it was the worst thing there. They really just need to let them loose or whatever. Like the dolphins and the sea lions, they seem very happy to be there. The killer whales are like, fuck you.
They are not happy to be there. They're like a couple of loose whales ourselves will be floundering around tonight on this show because we have a little ring rust here after not being on the air for a while. We got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. We got like six trailers, including the Star Wars Force Awakens full-length trailer that was dropped today. Yeah, sent the internet on fire.
It's not really... But it's a teaser trailer. Let's be honest.
It is a teaser trailer. Yeah, this is no story in this thing. And the Batman versus Superman trailer, we'll talk about that, which has officially been leaked online, along with a couple others, and reviews up the wazoo. Bueno. Yeah. And Furious 7, talking about my experience watching that in the motion D-Box moving seats. Also, a little bit of trivia. I can't get that one out tonight, but it is going to be only one question, not three, I promise. Let's get into the game, though, to start things off.
Not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
Okay, let's play the game real quick and let's be done.
I can't believe Paul Blart is coming out this weekend and people are thinking that it's going to do so well.
Wow.
How did this thing even sneak back out? Does Kevin James even have a career? Is this
Well, you think this is going to be the top dog of the new ones, right?
Has
I do
to
think
be.
That, yes. Right? Yeah.
I've heard predictions, though, up to $32 million and as low as $15 million.
But I wouldn't be surprised of over $30 million at this point because I don't seem to be able to peg these comedies anymore. People seem to come out for things that I think are good. So I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, Hot Tub Time Machine. Hard. Tanks this year, a slew of comedies so far.
Well, Horrible Bosses 2 really didn't do that well, and we'll talk about that.
Dumb and Dumber.
My feelings on that later on, but I don't get it, you know.
Yeah, so, this Paul is Blart, hard to...
Where are you going to go?
I'm going to go off personal gut feeling, and I'm probably going to regret this come Monday morning like I normally do. I'm going to say $18 million on this one, just because I think this looks
million.
So bad. I hope nobody sees
well,
this.
Well, I know, personally, that Kevin James has a bigger gut than that, so I'm going to go $25 million.
Man, which means that you'll get a Paul Blart 3 if this opens up to $25 million, because this was made very cheaply, as you can see from the trailer.
Who knows, though, honestly.
Yeah, so next we have Unfriended.
This Whatever you that want, Unfriended.
Facebook movie that we had, the horror film out there. Right now, the It Follows is really doing well in limited release, and I like the premise of that. I would this actually see that.
This is a Skype thing, right?
Not Facebook. Yeah, Skype. I'm sorry. Well,
it's
Unfriended.
Weird it's called Unfriended, yeah, but it's really, it takes place... All on the computer screens, right? And just through Skype screens.
Yeah, so it should really be called turned off. And this movie, though, it's looking like it could be a breakout hit, although I think the horror is going to have a rough run this year after having a stellar run last year. Where are you going to go on this one? I don't know.
I'm going to go 20.
Wow, you are going 20 on this. Okay. Shit. I was going to go 20 earlier. I went down to 14.
Is that what you put in?
Yeah, I put in 14. I'm going to stick with that.
I mean, that's possible as well. We've seen a lot of these horror movies come out and do between 10 to 15. You know, that's a tends to be a pretty sweet range for them. So.
I still think Furious 7 is sucking a lot of air out of the box office from these other films.
I think it's doing its own thing at this point. I don't think it's going to hurt anything else.
It's doing wheelies.
How do you feel about monkeys? You like monkeys?
Monkey see, monkey do. Unless you throw that doo-doo.
This is another one of these Disney things. These have been, you know.
These Earth Day releases.
Fairly popular, I guess.
They all max out about the same thing. What'd you go on this one?
I went 5.5.
I think I went 6 or 7. I actually went 7 on this one. So I think it says a little bit better than Bears, but not as well as some of the high point ones that we had.
You just think, I mean, for me at this point, you think people would get tired of being fooled into watching Discovery Channel stuff at the theater, but, you know, I guess not.
I think it's more fair for little kids at this point. You know, it's something to take small children to. Homies are playing for a while.
Right. And again, I mean, this genre really had its ups with the Penguins, right?
Oh, that was its heyday.
That's kind of what we're still running on, I guess.
You'll never see another nature documentary break out like that. That's a once-in-a-generation type thing.
Well, I wouldn't say never, but yeah, you're right. They're going to make a lot of them that don't.
Yes.
Child 44. I have no idea what this is. All I know is it's coming out very limited. I wouldn't have put this on here, but it did say wide release, and that's only 500 screens, which is not wide.
This is starring Gary Oldman and Tom Hardy. It has to do with Russian soldiers and World War II atrocities. This looks very glum, it's best to say. 500 screens isn't very wide, but I guess let's give it a go. What are you going with this?
The poster looks like a DVD release to me. I went at 1.9.
I was going 1.7, so... That was what I had written down here. So we're splitting very few hairs on that.
Well, you almost can't at 500 screens, and you know this is going to be a breakout hit.
Right. This is going to do better on video on demand and, like you said, a Redbox chance rental. This will be something that will be in people's Netflix queue for a long time and probably not get played.
For years to come.
Yeah. Things that sit on your queue.
Okay. And that's the box office. We're done.
All right, we're done with that.
Kick that shit out the door.
You know, Fast and Furious has been just killing it lately at the box office. And I don't know about you, but when I think about this franchise, I always think that obviously Justin Lin is the guy that really...
I want to know what your number worldwide for this is now.
Well, you asked me when this came out if...
Well, the bitch is going over a billion for sure.
You thought it's going to go over a billion? I said, yeah, for sure it goes over a billion. This is looking at like 1.5 at this point. This might be unstoppable.
You almost can't say that, though, with a straight face.
I know, right?
Yeah. Big deal.
Obviously the most successful seventh movie of any franchise ever.
Well, wouldn't have done this without Paul Walker's death, obviously.
I mean
The Dark Knight as well, you know, I think it had a lot to do with Heath Ledger's death. You do hate to say it, but it makes me wonder though how much, because this is huge, this is way over the top, and these movies have been growing, so for sure this seventh installment was going to do probably more than the last one.
Right, but this spectacularly, I mean, 350 to 400 million range just here in the U.S. alone, I got to believe 100 million of that was added because of the morbid curiosity and just or whatever you want to call that.
But it's funny that it's happening at a worldwide rate, you know.
Right, because it's
interesting to me.
Look, you can't say that, it's just Paul Walker, because Brick Mansions, which featured Paul Walker's in one of his last...
Oh, there are plenty of, a couple of them.
It didn't, you know, go through the roof. So, I mean, that made a measly $20 million here. So, signature role. What really happens, though, this is the high water mark. And what happens here is the next one does still extremely well, just like we saw The Dark Knight Rises do, but will not be reach these heights. This is a juggernaut. It really is. A cultural phenomenon at this point. I mean, this is going to be parodied and spoofed all over the place. Just wait.
I don't know if it'll be parodied and spoofed. I mean... The man died. Would that be in bad taste?
Not to spoof the franchise. Well, maybe.
No, not the franchise, maybe, but certainly. Well, I don't know. Okay, what's your trivia question?
My trivia is this. After Justin Lin reinvigorated it, now James Wan's taken over. Sure. Do you remember who directed the first Fast and Furious? Who casted all these actors?
I'm a big fan of Rob Cohen.
Oh, you do remember the Rob Cohen.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Rob Cohen has made some great movies and some incredibly shitty movies. And even the shitty movies I still like.
Well, I can give you a couple shitty of his movies.
Well, Stealth,
that he's done. Yes, Stealth is the one that unwatchable still.
Really? I like Stealth. I know it's bad. Believe me, I'm not going to stick up for it. It's a horrible fucking movie. But I don't know why I like it.
I would rather watch The Mummy 3 than watch Stealth again.
I like The Mummy 3 as well. But yes, it is what it is, you know. But Triple X is fucking awesome, right?
Triple X is awesome. Yeah.
I know you probably like Daylight.
Yeah, but it's definitely flawed.
Oh, it's a piece of dog shit too. But
I would say Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. Is
and really, the other one, Dragonheart.
Dragonheart, of course,
which is awesome.
Just recently, he did The Boy Next Door, which I can't really say was awesome.
What is The Boy Next Door?
The Jennifer Lopez movie where she fucked her neighbor.
Oh, I didn't even know that was him, huh?
He's picking up a paycheck on that.
Interesting, yeah. Hmm.
But do you recall who did the second one?
Right. The black guy.
No, that guy.
I don't. What is it? Boys in the Hood. What's his name?
Lee Daniels. Who are we talking about?
No, that's the butler.
You're right, John Singleton.
John Singleton. Yes, thank
you. Got
you.
So close to it.
It was about to come out.
The Boys in the Hood reference.
Yeah, the black guy. That's. I'm sure that's. I'm looking good now.
He's right. Like a good neighbor, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you do have your recollections, but Rob Cohen doesn't get enough credit, I think, for casting these actors. Really, he had a huge part in casting Paul Walker, in casting Vin Diesel.
Well,
and
the first one's good. I think everyone likes the first one.
Right, but so he started this franchise, and nobody ever mentions the guy in a passing.
Yes, he did start it, but to be fair, and when you look at this franchise, it really does split down the middle, right? I mean, the first three are kind of their own things, because the first one's its own movie, the second one's its own thing, and then the third one is the genesis for what comes after, but still its own thing. It's not till the fourth one and really the fourth one is really kind of the first one.
Yeah, in a weird way. These things are moving like trilogies in and of themselves. But now with the seventh one, as I'll talk in my review, they really do round everything all together in. So, hey, I'm glad. You're on a roll with the trivia lately. You've been getting names right
that
and everything.
That was easy.
Oh, shit, I'm surprised. That's because you're a fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a fan. Let's talk a little bit here about some movie topics. Instead of doing news, let's just talk a couple random things that caught my fancy here. Ryan Gosling signed on today, star opposite Harrison Ford in the Blade Runner sequel, going to be directed by Denis Villeneuve. I can't see this guy's name. The guy who did Prisoners.
I don't know who that is.
Which I liked quite a bit in The Enemy.
I never saw Prisoners. Hang on.
What do you think about this? We'll go with this?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Ryan Gosling has a look to do film noir. So, yeah. I mean, I'm taking that's what this is going to be, much like the original.
Right. Yeah, so I'm glad they got
He's done, some things like this already, hasn't he? Not futuristic stuff, but film noir. What was the gangster one? He was...
In fact, Gangster Squad.
Yeah, the gangster one's the Gangster Squad.
I like
that one. Which
wasn't
a terribly great movie. Yeah, it was all right.
That's a guilty
pleasure. But he seemed to fit into that time period. And The Notebook, I guess, as well, is kind of an older time period.
Right. It is futuristic film noir, you know what I mean? Expressionistic, throwback and all that. So
yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't know Ridley Scott wasn't directing this. That was the biggest news to me. I thought
but he's
Scott
producing.
No. What, is he too busy with Prometheus? Producing.
Yeah, I don't know. He's probably, making some epic, movie that's going to fail. he's probably still working on Sword and Sandal stuff. That's what he's.
Have you seen Exodus yet?
I haven't. I will.
Okay, yes, you will. But we'll talk about that when you see it.
I have a very long Netflix queue right now that I'm trying to work through.
That's what she
said.
They
keep sending me shit. I skip over everything I want.
All right, well, that's a perfect segue into our next topic, which I will call Netflix Fucks Me Again. And you had a good
DVD. You have the DVD now too, right?
Yes,
DVD,
I had the Netflix.
It is and the worst now. There's no competition for the DVD stuff anymore, and they don't give a fuck. Yeah. It's the worst.
So what happened the other day? You wanted something, you put it on your queue.
I mean, this is what happens to me all the time. I add something to my queue, and then they tell me, oh, we're sending it to you. And then that very same day when they email it to me, it goes streaming. It never fails. Constantly do that. It's like, hey, you guys, it's the same company. Don't you know?
Of course.
Why did you send it to me?
Because they're stoked that somebody got the disc.
Waste my time with useless. That shit. The yeah, I got to send useless. It right back.
I'm pissed off at Netflix because of the fact that things will be on streaming. And as you know, and as everybody I'm sure does, we have a lot of shit on the streaming queue. And there'll be certain things on there. Well, I go to watch The Avengers because I want to get all set for The Avengers. It's been on my fucking queue for maybe 2 years. It's gone. It's off fucking Netflix.
They pulled The Avengers?
They pulled The Avengers? I'm sure.
That makes sense.
Right before the next James Bond movie comes out, I'm sure they'll pull Skyfall right off there.
Yep, they've been doing it.
This sense of security that you think you can watch whatever, whenever you want to. Well, and then you go to fucking watch it when it's relevant. Yeah. It's fucking pulled.
I don't know. Their streaming isn't. I mean, I can't be the only one that's just not so happy with it anymore. There's a lot of shit on there that I just don't want to watch.
Well, they've hit a record high in their stock prices today, so good for them. But man, they fucked.
Well, I need
that.
More. You know, the Daredevil shows is good. It's I don't know if it's as great as everyone's been going ape shit over it. I'm a little tired of hearing everyone talk about how great everything is.
You said it's
good.
You said it's very Arrow-like. I saw about 10 minutes of it.
Have you not? I've seen this shit before. I mean, it's just, and it's not this bad. I really like it. I'm going to keep watching it. But it certainly isn't something that I've never seen before. Or something that, that I would go out there and just, I mean, the reaction has been astounding to me. It's like, good Lord, people, you fucking watch this shit. I mean, I heard this when Arrow came on. I heard the same thing. Stop it. Good, but let's not go crazy. But give me some real movies. I don't need original shit from Netflix. I need big movies. Am I wrong? Am I the only one?
Well, they're basically the Epix channel. If you have Epix, you have Netflix.
Yeah, they got the Asylum movies. That's seriously, like, come on.
Well, you can stream The Man with the Iron Fist too, so you're a lucky dog.
Yeah, thank God.
I'll talk about that a little bit later.
I really want to watch that one.
Well, you know what I do want to see, which is going to be coming out next year in conjunction with Batman versus Superman? They do all these DC animated movies, and some of them are just absolute dog shit. Like the Green Lantern Emerald Knights was really bad, and they had a couple of bad Superman ones in there. But to be fair, they had Batman Year One, which was good. But they got this one.
I always have to say, Under the Red Hood's fucking awesome.
Under the Red Hood is fucking awesome. I will give you that. I mean, and Batman Year One. That's fucking awesome. Yeah, that is a very good one. But they have one that really intrigues me for next year. They're calling it Batman 66, and they're going to draw it in the style of the 1960s television show, and they're getting Adam West and Burt Ward to voice it. And I think it's a fantastic idea. I hope they do a whole slew of these because I'm a big fan of that television show. They released some –
they travel on Route 66?
No, it's just the year that it was released. It was 1966 was the television show. So it's a nostalgic throwback. I really like it. I like the idea here. I like the pictures I've seen, Wow stuff.
They have pictures.
Yeah, they have some early drawings, and it looks great. I mean, this is a great way to kind of like keep that tradition alive. And remember, these characters were drawn
is
into these old Scooby-Doo shows, too.
Right, that's true. But is it going to be like the old Batman series?
I believe so. I think it's just a one-off, though, animated feature to just to be released with the movie.
I wouldn't like it. That old Batman thing's hokey. I mean, the movie was funny.
Of course
funny.
It's hokey.
But it's real bad.
The movie sucks, honestly, compared to the television. I mean, the television show's great to watch.
The movie's funny, I think.
Of course. But after, like,
I mean, it's horrible.
Know, it's only 20 minutes worth of shit. And then,
oh, you can't. Yeah, I could never actually really watch it. But, yeah.
You watch that in one
I just
sitting,
thought it was funny here and there, yeah.
So, yeah, I thought that was a little interesting, too, as well, because I'm a big fan of that show. And I do like the drawings and the style that they're drawing that in. So at least it's not some dark, brooding shit, and it's a little tongue-in-cheek. And it's a great way to continue that series and let Adam West pick up another paycheck, because God knows he needs to. He doesn't do enough nowadays.
he's been in enough of the sign enough autographs.
I mean, did Adam West just follow the William Shatner playbook or what? I mean, he's like the lower version of Shatner. These are the guys that like invented Comic Cons and Wonder Cons and shit like that. You know, these appearances and whatnot. Mm-hmm. They must have made. And speaking of these appearances, what is going on with your boy from Buffy, who gets shit faced and breaks every hotel room?
I don't know.
Your boy from Buffy, the little nerd kid, Nicholas Brendan.
He's breaking things.
Oh, you haven't read about this guy?
No, I don't know.
Kid's been in rehab, in and out of rehab. Oh, every time he goes on one of these conventions, he absolutely trashes a hotel room. He's wandering around
That's
naked.
That's great.
Oh, Google your boy from your Buffy, and he's got about 6 mugshots, and they're all from conventions he's going on. It must be in his star package that he gets 3 roofies and a bottle of Jack. Yeah. Buffy must pay good, at least, for conventions. I can't believe the guy can still afford this shit. You know, you read that about people that used to be in a show here and there, and you think, how the hell are you not working a daytime job? Because they go to conventions.
I don't know. Maybe it's his twin brother and not him. He has a twin brother.
Oh, it's surely him. Because he promised not to let those Buffy fans down again. Alas, he did. Alas,
he
did.
Who gives a shit at this point? Do whatever you want.
That's what she said. And on that, let's take a
quick... think Lou Ferrigno's not breaking some shit? Come on.
Louis Ferrigno is the most gentleman giant you've ever met. Okay?
Bud Bundy, that was the best one that I saw. Lou Ferrigno and Bud Bundy talking shit to each other at the Comic-Con.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Tell me this story. That's too good to cut to commercial.
I don't know. It wasn't really much of a story. He just walked by. But Bud Bundy was talking some shit about Lou Ferrigno, this and that. Lou Ferrigno was just across the way. Both signing autographs, of course.
At $20 a pop.
Yeah. I mean, nothing happened. It would have been great if something did. I mean, Bud Bundy would have been crushed.
I love that you're calling David Faustino Bud Bundy.
That's who he is.
Yes.
Tell me, who else is he? He's Bud Bundy.
He's about to be Hulk food in a minute. I mean, that's one of the weirdest. I'll tell you, let me give you my little weird experience one time at the booth. Is the kid that played a... Boba Fett's son in the Star Wars
sure.
movies.
Yeah, I've seen him too.
I didn't know you weren't supposed to bring alcohol into these things. Everyone's dressed as fucking fairy tale people, so yeah. I figured I could bring some alcohol in. So I'm walking around with a beer, and this guy's, where'd you get that? I brought it. Well, you got another one? So we gave him one, and the kid wants to come party with us. He's asking us where we're going after. And I'm telling my friend, we got to shake Boba Fett's kid, man. This is no good. This is no good, and I couldn't even tell you the actor's name, but he's about 9 in Star Wars, and here he is like 22, 23, and I think he's only working the WonderCon circuit, so.
He wants to party with the Maverick, man.
He wanted to party with the Maverick, but I'll tell you what, the Maverick was not up for a Sith Lord son, or a bounty hunter son. The kid did not have a bright future, I'm sorry. All right, let's take a break and come back with some reviews.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptical prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
Wait, I don't get it. Those all that genre and that time period. Those he means really great movies, right?
Exactly. The whole time, all I could think about was Bud Bundy cock punching Lou Ferrigno.
Oh no, he was he was a little afraid of Lou.
You think?
And he should be. I mean,
as he should be.
If I was the size of a Smurf, I'd be afraid of him too. Yeah,
screaming at him with only the minorest understanding of.
Well, that was half the fun. Was that he was? You know, Lou Ferrigno can't hear. And so he was fucking with him a little bit because he couldn't hear.
Ah, that's fucked up.
I think they were. They were. It was probably all the. They were probably fine. It was just a joke.
I thought they were like jockeying for position on the table of like where they were going to be seated, because you know, that's a very important thing.
No, they had booths.
All right, let's talk about some movies here instead of these B-rate stars.
Oh yeah, reviews. Oh shit, we're gonna do it.
Do it. I saw Furious 7 in the D box.
You did in the D box. That's the douchebag theater.
It really is. It is the douchebag theater. That's for sure. But it is. It was the motion seats, and it was about $18 a pop to see these things. But it was well worth it. I mean, it really gave the movie a lift. You know, pardon the pun. But as it starts, you know, there's a car racing scene, and my seat shot back. I mean, I dug my toes into the ground. So it really did aid in the movie's experience. Now, the movie itself. It's you know, it's not what you've come to expect of Fast and Furious. My problem with it is they're really, I don't know how much of it is them running out of ideas or how much of it was them patchworking things. Now, the Paul Walker stuff, which everybody wants to know about or everyone's talking about by now, I thought only one shot was jarring. Only one time was it visible, and they stepped away very quickly from it. But as the movie goes along, you kind of realize he's not in it much. His character, and in scenes when they're kind of all together, his body double or whoever it is that they were using, or even if it was him, is always in the back left, whereas in the other movies, he's kind of right up there in front, you know, very prominent. So, you know, they did very, I think, about as turning a negative, a star dying on them into as good of a position as they could have. It's just now these movies are turning into Mission Impossibles, and I mean, it has this whole subplot where...
Yeah, that was really the fourth one started that, though, right?
The movie, I mean, even going to the same locations for that Cruise hung out of, you know, now you're just driving cars out of. What's more impressive? I got to say, Cruise running down a building. I feel like I've been there. I've seen this. And when everything's CGI, how impressive is this shit? So it's just, you know, the movie, I don't want to get too down on it because the last 10 minutes of it are very well handled. I mean, the way that they handle the Walker character, everything is written out very well. But it's just, it has way too, it's got a subplot in it where they go and rescue this girl where it takes up about 30 minutes of the movie for no fucking reason other than to complicate it and give it another reason to have a set piece, an action set piece. So I gave it 3 out of 4 stars, but it's definitely, the weakening link here. And, I can't see much more. I mean, there's a scene where two cars ram each other head on. And I thought, well, now we've really run out of ideas. I mean, they've really just run out of ideas.
Well, I felt that about the last one.
You know, at least I gotta say the last one was kind of a high for me. As opposed, I really thought it was kind of.
I was kind of done.
This one's the kind of dumb. If you thought the last one was pushing,
I was done.
Oh, I think you said done.
I'm just kind of done with those characters at this point.
Universal.
I don't know. I've seen it.
Superheroes. So much. These are superhero characters now.
At this point, that's what I felt was a big thing with the last one. After a while, you start throwing people around, and they keep upping it and upping it. And you're like, well, why? I mean, these people are unkillable at some point.
Just, right. They've written themselves into a corner by doing that in a lot of ways.
I know.
They're absolutely invulnerable in any way because at least superheroes have a weakness. These people can't even be hurt because what happens next? I mean. Like I said, there's two scenes where cars running into each other head on. And I thought, my, that's just that's a weakness in writing of going, what can we do here? They're playing chicken. Well, they ram each other. Well, okay, now we've seen that. Now what happens here? He throws his body down the hill in the car and doesn't. Yeah. He survives. The other girl has to put on a helmet, but he doesn't because why? It's just, I mean, at least in 5 and 6, they had some really nice executed stunt pieces, but the James Wan style is very close to the Justin Lin style, but it is down a step. There is a lacking of something there. I can't exactly tell you what it is. I've only seen the movie one time. Maybe I'll be able to figure it out later. But, you know, it's a goofy ride. I'll say that. I mean, it's as preposterous as all hell. So popcorn entertainment, sure.
Well, it seems to be delivering. So.
Oh, it's delivering in spades. But I can't tell you if that's the movie or, you know, that morbid factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. What do you got? What do you got? What did you see?
I don't know. Oh, let's talk about Horrible Bosses too. You seen this, right?
I liked Horrible Bosses too.
Why did it make so less of money? I thought this was funny.
I thought it was,
and
not
quite
as
honestly,
funny.
I liked these characters. Namely, really, we're talking about these actors. They were just as they're complete fucking morons, and I think it's hysterical.
Not as funny as the first.
I'll disagree a little bit on that. I think it's just as funny as the first. The only thing you're missing is, you know, you don't really have the horrible bosses as much in
right.
this one as well, you had that in the first one.
Which everyone pointed to as the reason it didn't make money. And I thought,
but
I
still
bullshit on that.
Thought it was very funny. I don't know what's wrong funny. With this movie that it would be any worse than the other one. I don't know. I mean, I'd see a third one at this point. I thought I liked it.
It's leagues better than Dumb and Dumber 2, I can tell you that. So, which made twice as much money as it. And this was supposed to be the big, you know, raunchy comedy hit of the winter, which it didn't turn out to be. But it was on its own merit. It will get discovered because on HBO or Redbox or Netflix, this thing will play. And it plays well. It's funny as hell. I think it's really deserves a look. I think people looked at it unfairly. I don't know why this didn't score with audiences.
Yeah, if you haven't seen this, I say watch it, especially if you liked the first one at all. I really liked it, yeah.
I thought the first 30 minutes were very clever, and I mean, especially when they go for the infomercial on the talk show.
It's just fun. The whole movie's fun. I mean, there's a shitload of montages in this. And it's a great idea. Because after that first one, you think, well, what the hell will you do with the Horrible Bosses 2? And maybe this is the problem that they had, but really it's ingenious. Are they like, how could you extend this and make it fresh? And they did it.
Yeah, I think these guys work well together, too. And I'm not a big fan of Charlie Day. I think he's an acquired taste, and Jason Sudeikis can run his course on me. But these guys working well together.
But working off on these three characters and you know, trading off between them is fucking hysterical.
You know, yes, I even
find stupid things funny that I probably wouldn't normally find. But, you know, hearing Jason Bateman's delivery of like, oh, you said my name. Don't say our name over the radio. This is shit. Yeah. But it's fucking funny, you know? I really think that's funny in this movie. Normally, it probably wouldn't be.
Yeah, those are actors helping the page, you know, which doesn't always happen. Sometimes it's the inverse. So somebody tell me why that movie tanked. Help me out, please. Tell me why.
I can figure it out.
Or why you dislike it, because I don't see anything wrong with that movie, especially after coming off some of the really bad ones like Just Be Cops, which did extremely well.
That one was not good.
You know, so some of those things kind of make me scratch my head a little bit. And Paul Blart 2 will probably do better, which is even stranger. I saw Catch Hell, which is the Ryan Phillippe directed movie that he wrote and starred in. I texted you about this the other day. I kind of really stand on this thing. I guess I give it 3 stars.
Did you like it?
Did I like it? Okay, it's a subgenre movie, so it's your kidnap thriller movie. This is kind of like Deliverance, Black Snake Moan, JCVD, all mixed up in one. Kind of like I said with Robert Altman's gaze upon it. So it's an offbeat, almost satirical look at former stars. Ryan Phillippe being very candid, almost playing himself. I mean, the studios don't want him anymore. He's past the teeny bopper age. They want somebody like Channing Tatum, who's an it boy now. And this guy's nearing 40. All the roles have dried up. He's just got out of rehab. He takes a movie in Louisiana. It's a shitty little budget movie. He doesn't want to do it. He goes out to get picked up in the morning. And these two hillbillies kidnap him. They hold him hostage. Apparently, Phillippe fucked the wife of one of the guys back, you know, on a different set, and this guy is going to torture him and fuck with him and destroy his life. So it's clever in the way that TMZ and things like that pick up on the story of where he's at. Has he gone Sheen-like? And these guys are ruining his life, sending, you know, pictures from his phone, fucking with his Twitter account. There's also a very strong homoerotic kind of mind game being played between him and one of his captors, but it's almost satirical in the way that it looks at Hollywood and the way an actor can be reborn and his career reinvented because of things. So I thought it was a little smarter in the end than I gave it credit for initially. And, you know, Ryan Gosling's getting a lot of heat for directing that Lost River movie and how bad that is. So at least this is a straightforward narrative that shows that Phillippe as a director can hit beats and tell a story. It's a very low budget deal, but I think it's worth a look. I think it's an interesting watch. It reminded me of Tusk in the sense that a character going through almost like Misery in a sense too. But Tusk because I saw Tusk recently and because of a lead character who's not very likable getting maligned.
Okay.
Do you like Phillippe?
Yeah, I like him a lot.
Yeah, I would recommend this thing because
Way of the Gun, I think, is a movie that maybe not a lot of people have seen at this point, but I would definitely check out.
Yeah, Way to Gun is fantastic, especially with Christopher McQuarrie.
Yeah, it has a great cast. I mean,
he's doing the new Mission Impossible.
Lewis Jack is good Reacher. In it. I mean, yeah. Way to Gun was a surprise.
Benicio del Toro is fantastic in that.
Yes, he is. Yeah, there's a lot of people in it, but yeah, but a movie not a lot of people know about. Check it out if you haven't seen it.
John Wick. You saw John Wick, which I really liked.
Yeah, I like John Wick a lot.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, what more can you say about it? He just runs around and he fights people. It's nice and short and it gets to the point and it's done.
Thank you. I said that movie, to me, reminded me if Michael Mann had shot an action film, that's how it would look. It looked like he existed in the Mann universe, the way people were dressed, the lighting, the kind of cold textures. But seeing them not cut away was almost jarring at times in how much like actual action was going on, how many hits were being done. Of course,
this has great stunts in it.
Great stunts in this movie, but not outlandish stunts.
He's just so
efficient.
Efficient. God, is he just cold as steel in this? I mean, I've never seen more. I mean, for as realistic as it can be in that sense of like, yeah, he's a hitman. These people come, he kills every fucking buddy, and he makes sure they're dead. You know,
right?
He doesn't fuck around. But then you get the joke will happen like at the end of it or whatever. You know, the cop they'll show up and be like, hey, how's it going? You think he's in trouble? And he's not. He knows the guy, and they're like, are you back in? I don't know. You know. I was like, all right, well, have a good day, you know. I thought that was funny. I played out after a while. They kept it up, but yeah, did you like the humor in this?
I did. I liked
it worked.
The overall efficiency of the movie. It came on, it did its shit, and it went out. You know, it didn't overstay its welcome in the least. And I love the fact when he breaks into the bottom of his basement to get his shit back. You know what I mean? When he gets that sledgehammer out and you're like, oh, yeah. I mean, I love that. And the interaction at the beginning at the gas station. I mean, these kind of like 90s action staples that really were well done. I mean, this movie was heads and tails way better than Run All Night. Some of these gunmen, some of these really shitty action movies I've seen recently. And John, there's a reason Wick was a modest hit. I mean, this was a word of mouth hit. I thought it was really good. I wouldn't mind seeing this character again. I don't know where they would do with him, but I liked the way this was done.
I liked it. I mean, Reeves really fit the role as well, so that was nice.
Yeah. But seeing the one shot taken a lot of this was, it was cool, I thought. You know, I liked seeing it added a lot. You realize how much is added when it's not shaky cam and cutaways and whatnot.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, I really liked this one. I was high on this one. Another one I really liked, which I probably put as my favorite movie of last year, was Whiplash. I know you don't place it that high. What did you think of this guy?
What did you find exciting about this fucking movie?
I thought it was like Full Metal Jacket for art school.
Give me a fucking break.
Honestly, I thought that character was very...
There's nothing scarring or scary in this movie. Miles Teller's character is so fucking weak. It's ridiculous. But more importantly, the ending is just what? What happened at the end of this movie? Seriously, it just falls the fuck apart. It's just, and some shit. Okay, we're done.
Come on.
He's like, where's the fucking ending on this thing?
There are great scenes in this movie.
There are some few great and far in between great scenes
come
in this
on.
Movie.
When he goes to dinner with Paul Reiser, who's his dad, who's well cast in that, and those kids are wanting to, you know,
Paul Reiser's barely in the movie, but okay.
Three words that you'll never hear from the NFL. We want you. You know what I mean? Remember when he's talking to these guys on that? It's a great scene in that movie. Now, I'll give you this. The character with the girl is played out for shit. You know, the whole
anything that he has to do with him, you know, this movie's just for shit. I've seen 80s movies that having to deal with this kind of stuff that handles it way better. They don't the drama. His life really is nothing before he gets into the school, and it's nothing after the guy fucks him, and it's nothing after he puts his life back together. It's nothing after he accomplishes it. It's nothing before. It's just nothing.
So you're saying you didn't fall for any of it? You didn't think when he ran into him later that he really didn't know that he
had I fell for that totally. I love that. That twist is fucking awesome. But what's the payoff of that? Nothing.
When he gets him on stage to embarrass him.
After that, what's the payoff after that?
He
finally fucking overcomes that, and then the movie just ends. And give me a fucking break. This is the big whoop-dee-doo whoop-daw that we've worked so hard for, and he's done jack shit, nothing?
Yes, because he found his own beat.
No.
All right, we're going to agree to disagree on this one, obviously. But I thought
I don't think it was grand enough. It worked up this whole thing. J.K. Simmons' character really fucking gets this kid by the balls and just throws him around. And the kid doesn't triumph really too much over that. If anything, he more or less earns his respect. And everyone's just cool. Everyone's so cool in this movie after they fuck each other over. They're just like, eh, you know, it affected me a lot, but bygones be bygones. And then it's like, fucking what?
I really fell for this one. I wasn't expecting much, and maybe you had...
I was expecting more, yeah. Especially after what everyone's been hyping it up, and they really just kind of like, meh.
I think great performance, too, by J.K. Simmons, obviously, Oscar
winner. I think, yeah, well, yelling. He's good at yelling. Congratulations.
And flaring those nostrils. Those are impressive nostril flares.
Yeah.
Did you watch Atari Game Over? Did you watch
this? I did. Yet?
All right, this is that documentary, for those that don't know, kind of a tongue-in-cheek documentary by Zach Penn, who has worked with Werner Herzog on these satirical documentaries.
He's a writer.
Yeah, I mean, he penned the story for The Avengers, Last Action Hero, a lot of things.
Pacific Rim, all that stuff, yeah.
This is about Atari going out of business, really the failing of the video console pre-Nintendo, and the urban myth that they buried a bunch of cassettes, cartridges of E.T. the game out in the desert. So he takes a whole bunch of team and excavates this, mm-hmm. and this is the story that follows him. Did you like the documentary?
Too much about the fucking dig. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, they were acting like this. You know what I thought was, I hate to use the word cute, but they were acting like, and you can tell with that last shot, the Spielberg
everything else. Type.
Vibe to it. I kind of liked the mm-hmm. whole way, you know. And then there was the sandstorm, and it reminded me of the beginning of Close Encounters, and the way that they kept equating it to their childhood, and some of the characters they had on there. How do you want to be referred to? He said, "Gentleman Adventurer." You
know? Yeah,
I just thought, like, get out of
but
here.
But that was the good thing about this documentary. This is different. If you there are several other documentaries about this, about Atari, and video games in general that'll mention Atari. And this is the one documentary that really got down to the people involved with Atari and with the end of Atari. And this is presented in an entirely different light than how most people present it. And so it's eye-opening in that sense.
Yeah, I was very intrigued by the whole idea of the Atari culture, you know, like almost the mm-hmm. this freewheeling hippie society within Silicon Valley before.
It was, I mean, a lot of things about Atari being that they, you know, the one thing that I always hear is they basically figured they could buy names, you know, E.T., whatever big name
movie
they could,
times.
And then just put, it didn't even have to be a movie time, but they were just buying a name for a lot of money and then making a shitty game and putting it out. But that's not actually how it was.
This documentary, though, does focus on the dig to find the cartridges. We won't tell you if they do find the cartridges or not here.
I already knew before.
Yeah, so did I. All right, they do find the cartridges. So they know this landfill as all these
games. It was all over the news.
But the documentary itself, I mean, with the last shot of the storage unit being closed, like in Raiders, I just thought, like, it left me kind of smiling because I liked this because it was about guys who really gave a shit about this stuff. You know, they really did. And it wasn't just fanboy type stuff. It was like
from the people
grew
involved.
Up with it. Yeah, exactly. I mean, this Howard Saint.
I mean, they get the programmers and the guy who actually made E.T. and all that stuff. Hearing him talk about Spielberg and all the interaction. I mean, this is a very different documentary than most others. It feels like they got to the heart of it, where most everyone else would look up Wikipedia and make the documentary based on this. These guys went out and got the actual people.
Yeah, the fact that Spielberg signed off on the game, I mean, it's kind of like his saving grace. Now, I actually had this game as a kid. Did you own this game?
No.
I owned this game, and I forgot that I owned this game until I saw one of the levels with like the White House things, and I thought, I remember falling into those fucking holes. this thing sucked, and I was young too, so I couldn't play it very well. But definitely had that one. But yeah, good documentary for what it was. Kind of a mockumentary in a way too, because it is. I don't know. It makes fun of a lot of things, too, that are going on in it. Mm-hmm. Another documentary that is on streaming that I watched, My Life, directed by Nicholas Refn. This is the guy who directed Drive, and this is the – we talked about the trailer for this a while back. Mm-hmm. His wife videotaped him – do they even use that word anymore? Videotape? Recorded him making Only God Forgives, and that was a movie I put at the top of my list for worst of the year that it came out. This – shed some light on possibly why it's so bad. I mean, he has no idea what he's doing. He's motivated by Jardovsky, who's in this a lot. I mean, this is your boy, and he's a fucking moron. I'm sorry, but I'm watching and listening to him say things to him. And I'm thinking, why would you listen to this man? Why are you trying to impress him? And you can see what happens in this, strangely enough, is I like Nicholas Refn more, and I disliked Ryan Gosling a lot. Gosling comes off as this kind of just blob there presence. I don't know if he didn't want to be on camera or what it was, but
it's interesting that his directorial debut, which is coming out pretty soon, looks like a Nicholas Refn ripoff.
I thought so too. And Jordovsky and all these guys, you know, I mean, influenced heavily, you know, Buñuel, all these kind of very expressionistic guys. So maybe he was just studying on set the whole time. But documentary is only an hour long. Worth a look for an artist in a very paranoid, cranky state towards his family, but nowhere near as captivating as something like Hearts of Darkness, which is still the cream of the crop when it comes to this type of documentary. It's like self-exposing documentary, I think. All right, moving on. What else you got?
I got nothing.
Nothing else? All right, briefly, Man with the Iron Fist 2, not as good as the first one, which is strange because it's done by a better filmmaker.
The first one wasn't even that good.
I know, but you know what? At least the first one, had a lot of going on. This is just gory, and the story is a weak follow-up to it.
The first one had no story.
And the first one was just with shots of people coming to village and fighting, but at least it had some sort of ingenuity with Russell Crowe's gun knife and things like that. Last thing we'll talk about on the review section is Supermensch, The Life and Times of Shep Gordon, which is a documentary on the prolific talent manager Mike Myers. Did a documentary on the guy. Check it out. He's managing Alice Cooper amongst making all these celebrity chefs who they are. A really interesting life on one of Hollywood and the music business life. Nice guys. A lot of the stuff that Shep Gordon. A lot of the things that turned out in Counting Crows. Cameron Crowe's almost famous. In his almost famous movie was taken from his travel with Shep Gordon and the bands he managed. So you hear the real life shit of what happened. Honestly, the best one I saw on this whole show that we'll talk about is Whiplash. I know you don't agree with that, but underrated out of all these, the most underrated, I will say, is Horrible Bosses 2. Horrible Bosses 2. Stop fronting. What else we got?
Okay, now what?
Trailers.
I don't know. Do you want to do streaming pick of the week?
What do you got for a streaming pick of the week?
My streaming pick of the week is Halt and Catch Fire, which is an awesome television show from AMC. If you haven't seen it, it took a while for me to finally see it. It just went streaming. It's fucking great. It takes place in the early 80s. It's about these guys cloning an IBM PC and building that. It's everything the Steve Jobs movie should have been. It's like Pirates of Silicon Valley for a modern age.
What's this called now?
Halt and Catch Fire.
Yeah, I saw that they just released that on there. I didn't know what that was about. I thought it was some sort of like
sucked me right in. It's fucking good.
Oh, it sucked you? That's good. That is good there. Well, my streaming pick of the week is going to be Atari Game Over because I thought that was such a clever little documentary. I think anybody that grew up in our generation will get a kick out of it, especially if you longed for that Nintendo after playing an Atari 2600 because you saw what a difference those two consoles were.
The difference between the first Super Mario Brothers and Super Mario Brothers 3 is astounding, and that's the same fucking system.
Yeah, right? Because one, you had a raccoon tail, and the other, you
could fly. Yeah.
Exactly.
Frog suit, yeah.
I can fly. All right, let's move on and talk about these damn trailers.
Maybe. Oh, here we go.
There we go.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert! Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay. Hit it.
All right, the big dog in the room today is Star Wars, right? This is the teaser trailer that was released.
He's the little dog.
He is the little guy. I don't know. The Star Wars thing today absolutely went ape shit all over the internet. It's probably going to break download
Good
records.
Lord. It's just a teaser trailer, though.
It is a teaser trailer, but I will say this, that opening, I streamed it from my iPad. I threw it to my television. I watched it on my big screen here. So
I watched it on my big screen.
Okay, so good. We watched it on the good ones here. And that first shot with the little bike or whatever it is driving that you can barely see. And then in the background, the battle cruiser is in the sand.
It's great
shots. That was one of those awe-inspiring moments that gave me hope that maybe that this will get the scale back to it, that it'll give it a sense of life and it just – I don't know. I just the architecture inside, the settings, the way the lights are designed like they used to be, the padding on the walls, all that shit. And then you get old ass Harrison Ford coming out of nowhere, looking like he's been cryogenically frozen.
You have Luke doing the whole voiceover.
I know. I you know what though? You're right. It's all collection shots, and my gripe will be that there is a little too much of that false zoom shit on the flight scene.
I mean, yeah. Look, it looks great, but then what did you expect from it? Or like, here's the special effects. I'm like, yeah, it's fucking Star Wars, you know? Okay, there's spaceships. What's the fucking movie?
They're not going to – that will be the last thing. The
I know. Night. This is like just say, hey, don't forget, guys. There's Star Wars coming out in December.
Right.
Don't forget.
Well, it's – you know,
still
all these
looks
other...
great. I mean, I still want to see it, but no more than the last teaser. I was like, yeah.
Well, I
you
think
got me still.
Right. I haven't gone away yet, but I think that this is it's going to give people more things to gripe about and dissect.
Oh, they've already frame by frame this fucking thing all over the internet. That's why I just – it's really that big, you know?
Oh, yes, it is, sir.
I mean, God. Oh, please. You're not even that into it. It's – who is doing this, you know? Oh, the new X-Wings. Did you see the new TIE Fighters? Or the first glimpse of the new TIE Fighters? They've redone them. It's like, are you fucking kidding me?
I love this Honestly, I geek out with the Star Wars shit. This is my jam. So I'm glad that they got this because it looks like Star Wars X-Wings are flying in Lord of the Rings territory. I thought they were going to go bomb Bill Boy and his buddies. So I'm like, where are you? In Iceland? What kind of fucking... but that one shot, I'm telling you, is awe-inspiring, and that's all more than I got from any of the trailers of the first the prequel series. So I'm happy about that, that at least we have a couple of things that will recall it. I mean,
I like the look. The look is great.
Do you think this has a shot at breaking the opening weekend record that the Avengers has and may reestablish this this May?
If it keeps up looking like it's looking, you know, it's just so fucking far away at this point. You're dangling it's a tiny carrot you're dangling in front of me right now, right? At this point, you might as well just be like, yeah, we're making a Star Wars movie. It's like, yeah, okay, like I want to know about the movie.
That will be, like I said, the last thing they will divulge because the story is not what they're going to try to sell for a long time.
I'm excited.
Because honestly, the story is irrelevant. You're going to go anyways. People are still going to go. I mean, look at The Phantom Menace.
I know, but so. I want to know if it's going to be any good. You're right. I'm going to go no matter what, but I still want to know if it's going to be good. That's why I'm saying that why is everyone getting so excited over this? It's fucking Star Wars. Here's some Star Wars. It's like, yeah, okay. But where's, like, what's the point? Like, I could do this with any movie and have it look... whatever, it's not a real trailer. Excited over little things, I feel like.
I
want to see one of the broad strokes here, and let me feel this out.
Or attempting to steal the thunder today, I should say, is Batman versus Superman, which trailer was...
That's right.
The teaser trailer was leaked online, or a teaser of the teaser trailer, but a full-length
trailer.
From
where, like Portugal or something?
Yeah, and it looks like it's in Portuguese, subtitled in Portuguese. It was released today. This was shot handheld. This has been almost taken down from the internet completely, but we got a chance to see it before it was taken down. 15 minutes will be shown in theaters. So we got our first glimpse of Ben Affleck as Batman, this whole world. What did you think here? Are you intrigued?
I don't know. I really don't care.
I'm intrigued, I thought. I'm a little more intrigued than I thought really? I would be. Yeah, I really am.
I could, you know, wipe my butt with this. It's just nothing. Superman, he's so Superman. We don't like him because we're people and we're scared of him. And then Batman's going to hunt him down? That's what I got out of this. I don't really... What the hell is this?
That's what I got too, that he's a false deity, that they want to go after him, and that Batman has been enlisted almost by the people.
It's like, all right, this could be an animated movie at this point. I don't, where you, I just, you know, Debbie Downer here, but fuck, I mean, I'm just getting a little done with the comic book stuff again.
Well, this one reinvigorated me. I like this trailer. I think this thing, for what I saw of it here, and it's a year out. I mean, this is a very early time to get a trailer. I mean, this movie doesn't come out until May of next year, or March of next year, 2016. It's weird to see on a trailer in early 2015, beginning of second quarter here. But at least Cavill, when I saw him as Superman, I thought, okay, I bought him a little bit easier this go around in that trailer. I thought, well, there's Superman. Because I've gotten used to him.
It's like CGI half the time he's on there. It's just his face once. The Ben Affleck face is there once, and the other Batman shit CGI. It's not. Again, this is just not anything.
Well, what about
the movie? Could be totally different than this. That's the thing that you get from this. These are all marketing materials, and they're all just being made on their own. It feels like. Like, hey, by the way, there's.
Did you
forget there's a Batman versus Superman movie? Because there is. Just want you to know that. That's what I feel like we're getting at this point. It's like, fuck, where's. Either give me some shit about the movie or don't show me anything.
Well, it's a movie's a year off. So, I mean, they're not going to tell you what story's about at this point. I mean, they don't have to.
Why do I need to know? I know this. I know the movie. I know it's coming out. I know. I got it.
It's all going to be a collection of special effects shots because that's all they're going to selling. Because it doesn't matter what the story is about. People buy tickets to this shit.
I fucking hope that not.
That's all they've been doing with Age of Ultron for a long time.
That's all I've been doing with every movie. I know it. I'm sick of it. I want a real movie. I want someone to sit down and have to write something, not just like, and shit blows up.
So even if Age of Ultron is well written, they're not going to sell that story because they don't have to. Right, but they don't have. All they have to sell is the fact that these four guys are fighting with each other. So, I mean. Of course, they're selling their strong hand, you know, but they're not going to tell anything about it because they don't want fucking people already poking holes and shit a year out.
But okay.
So why release a trailer this far out is my thing. I don't understand.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm complaining about. I don't like these teaser trailers are not. It's okay. You want to release one, but now we're starting to release two, three. You know, it's too much.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen enough Mad Max trailers. I'm ready to see that movie.
No shit.
In fact, I saw the trailer for that in the D box, and the seat moved so much. I thought, "Yep, I'll be seeing this in D box." So, going back for that one. But what did you think of Ant-Man? Because that was released this week too, after the teaser trailer, which was very short and small.
I can see why now. I mean, this movie looks fucking ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
This is just the bad at every level. I mean, I'll watch this. Sure, no problem. Looks fucking horrendous, right? I mean, it's laughably bad. I think it gets the laughs when it wants the laughs, but I don't know that it knows that it's getting the laughs because it's a piece of shit. It's silly. Well,
it may get laughs, but is it the right laughs?
That's what I'm saying. Like,
you know, so
they do it like, it's funny here, and I laugh at it, but I laugh because it's just bad.
It reminded me of Mystery Men a little bit, which is never good. I mean, glossed up with beautiful special effects and Michael Douglas in there too. But it really has that kind of like, look how clever this is. We're not really taking this serious, but we are. But we're not. But we are. Well, put $100 million into it.
Stuff,
so,
all the tiny shrinking down things. I don't get it. It's too hokey.
It's too cartoony. And I like Guardians of the Galaxy. Silly. This is fucking silly. Just fucking silly.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on and talk about Adult Beginners. This is a comedy drama with Rose Byrne, Bobby Cannavale, and Nick Kroll. I think this looks really good. I was surprised.
I agree as well. I think this looks like one of those good indie-type movies, you know, that comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes this, or typically this stars Ben Stiller. really this Nick Kroll role is a Ben Stiller type role. But comedians usually do these small indies. You saw the Skeleton Twins last year with Hader and Wig, and now Nick Kroll is getting in the business here. I think that Bobby Cannavale guy, Cannavale, or that guy's name is actually a funny guy. He's got a funny screen presence. And him and Rose Byrne has done a couple things together now, including Danny Collins they're in right now and then this movie. But Nick Kroll, who I've never really acquired the taste for on his comedy show, even though he is admittedly funny.
I mean, come on.
I mean, I think he's funny, but a little of him goes a long way for me. But I liked him in this trailer. I really did.
Well, I mean, obviously you have to like The League, right?
I like The League. Yeah, I do like The League. But his show, his own sketch show.
I know, it's not very good.
Yeah. It's a little much.
But I do like him. And this looks, obviously, this isn't like his sketch show at all. This is a real movie.
Yeah, I'd see this one, though. And this is, usually I'm not up for these ones, but this one looked good for some reason. Now, on the opposite spectrum of that is another one of these coming of age or midlife crisis type movies. Yeah. Just Before I Go with your boy, Sean William Scott. I did not care for this. This is the directing debut of Courtney Cox, and this trailer I did not care for in the least.
I thought this is – to me, this is hysterical because this movie looks like something out of the early 2000s. You know, this is something that Sean William Scott would have done, you know, mid-2000s, something like that. I mean, it looks exactly like that.
It looks like something he's done already before. Does
That's
it
what I mean. Yeah, exactly. Which just shows you where he's, you know – gone.
Well, I'm glad to see the guy popping up because I don't mind him as an actor. Stifler is always going to be Stifler, although he has done good work, and even in things like Mr. Woodcock, which is funny, you know, in his little bit role there, and all sorts of weird shit. But this is, I don't know, you like this trailer, or you just think it looks reminiscent of something you've already seen?
Well, no, I mean, this looks like, you know, cheap shit, but it just reminds me of his career going down the toilet. I don't know, is that bad? I would watch this. I don't think I have a problem with it necessarily, but yeah, it doesn't look like anything special.
I don't know why this movie popped in my head while I was watching this trailer, because it really doesn't have anything to do with this, but it reminded me of Dead Man on Campus.
Yeah, exactly.
Something like that. You know what I mean? Like something just like shitty like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just shitty like that. All right, so don't see that one. And the last trailer we have is The Gallows. This is a horror film from Blumhouse.
The Hateful Eight. Do you want to talk about that?
Did you watch that? Which one?
The Hateful Eight.
It was pulled before I could get a look at it.
Oh, you didn't watch the other one. So.
No, it was pulled already. It was pulled down. So you tell me, what's going on with the Hateful Eight trailer? What is it?
You can watch it. You can still watch. They pulled the good version, but you can go watch the one that was filmed off the Sin City. It's nothing. It's not a thing. It's words on a screen.
Oh.
Yeah, so maybe really nothing to talk about.
Well, The Gallows is a horror film that is coming out July 10th, and you put this one on the list. Did you like this trailer? I mean, what are we seeing?
I thought this was
here?
An effective teaser.
You thought so?
Yeah, but I haven't. It doesn't explain anything about the movie, so I don't know how well it does in that sense. But this is a Blumhouse thing, that's why.
I thought the best teaser or trailer like this recently that we watched, and you watched it on the show too, was Insidious Chapter 3 with the knocking on the
good.
Wall.
Yeah, that was better
because
than this.
That kind of told a little creepy little short
but
story
in
itself.
But they were trying to do the same thing with this, you know.
But I didn't think this one was nearly as, I don't know, I guess that they're kind of
maybe
running
not
out of
as
things.
Good as that one, no, yeah. But I still thought effective in its own way.
Creepy, but you know, I do like that that the quotes on screen during this are attributed to audience screening. Did you see
I
that?
Know. Yeah.
Scared the hell out of me. Quoted to audience screening. I mean, we're really pushing for things here now.
This is a movie. Yeah, well, it's gotten some praise. I'm interested.
It's got a great release
it.
Date. July 10th is right in that what Purge.
What's
2
about a high school play? There was an accident and a student died. And then they decide later on to redo the play or whatever as some sort of a the honor of the person who died, right? It's like on the anniversary of their death, they're going to redo the.
It's like a Phantom of the Opera here or something like that.
Yeah, but a much a Paranormal Activity version of that, I guess.
And with Blumhouse behind it, it probably will be good, because they really, everything they do is watchable for the horror genre. That's saying something, because I'm not a big fan of it. And they do bring...
Well, and hitting the teen, you know, area here might actually do something.
Yeah, interesting to see if Unfriended will do any business this weekend, if it goes to that mid-teens or if it goes higher. Because the genre, every time I think it's done, it does have a hell of a weekend in it. But something like... I prefer the... Not just straight up horror, but something that it's a little bit different too, like The Purge Part Two and things like that. So,
yeah,
I think that what they did. Did you ever see a Deliver Us from Evil?
No,
the Eric Bana one. I still recommend that one.
I never saw it
for a watch. I want to, just because it has your guy from Community on there, Joel. Joel McHale in a badass role, and it's so weird. And at first, you think he's fucking around. You're like, oh, wait, he's like the tough cop guy. Like the ex special forces cop? Okay, I get it. I'm down with it.
I could see him in a role like that.
The guy's like 6'4". I'll give him that.
He's huge, yeah.
He really is tall as hell.
He's fairly well built.
Yeah, I saw him in something. I was like, Jesus, guy's like 6'4" and ripped. Joel McHale's been putting in some work. He's putting in that time for Ted Part 2. All right, well, that's going to wrap up our episode 270 tonight. We got through that one rather painless, right? Like ripping the Band-Aid off?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. That was a good one, huh? Yeah. All right, good, guys. Oh, yeah. Right in the eye, Lush. We want to thank you all for continuing to stick with us here on MovieMavericks.com's podcast. It'll be out there on Stitcher, iTunes, Talk Radio, wherever you're hearing us at. We want to thank you guys for listening to the podcast. All of our past podcasts, say that again three times at 2 a.m.
Our posses, yeah.
Yeah, our posses can be found next to us, but our podcast can be found on the internet at iTunes and MovieMavericks.com. That'll do it. Go ahead and check us out for further podcasts and further reviews. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com/warp9. Engage!